Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life with your host Avik. This podcast is all about exploring the latest research, sharing personal stories and providing personal tips for improving our mental health and well-being. Each episode will be joined by experts in the field of mental health as well as individuals who have experienced the transformative power of a healthy mind firsthand. Together, we will dive into a range of topics from managing stress and anxiety to building resilience and cultivating happiness. So, join us on this journey to discover new ways to take care of our minds, bodies, and souls. And let's work together to create a healthier, happier world one episode at a time. So, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Healthy Mind, Healthy Life. I'm your host, Avik. And as you all know, on Healthy Mind and Healthy Life, we explore the journeys of remarkable individuals. So today we are joined by Ed Hajem. So welcome to the show, Ed.
Nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Lovely, lovely. That's really great to hear from you. So Ed, like before we start our conversation, I would love to mention this to all of our listeners that Ed is a seasoned Wall Street executive with over 50 years of investment experience, holding senior roles at the Capital Group, EF Hutton, and Lehman Brothers. So he is currently the chairman of High Vista, a Boston-based money management company. So his life is truly, truly inspiring, like from being kidnapped at three and growing up in foster homes to becoming a successful business leader and the philanthropist. His memoir, On the Road Less Traveled, an unlikely journey from the orphanage to the boardroom. So tells his incredible story. Yes, you heard it correct. So why to wait? Let's join us as Ed will share his insights on the resilience, leadership, and giving back. So get ready to be inspired by Ed on Healthy Mind and Healthy Life. So welcome to the show again, Ed.
Great. Thank you. That's good. That's a good introduction. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you so much. So Ed, to start with, like if you can share how your early life experiences influenced your approach to entrepreneurship and also at the same time, the career choices.
Well, as you said, I grew up in orphanages and foster homes. I tell my story, and no one came to my grammar school graduation, my high school graduation, my college graduation, or my graduate school education. My father was a radio operator aboard a ship, and on my first 18 years, we spent about a year or so together. He spent most of the times at sea, and he had come to the United States around the turn of the century. I became quite wealthy, lost everything in 1929-33. And so he picked up some horrible demons and divorced my mother when I was three and basically kidnapped me and basically told me my mother had died. But he unfortunately couldn't take care of me, so I ended up really in five foster homes and two orphanages until I was 18 years old. All of that period, which sounds pretty difficult, actually produced a series of disadvantages for me that turned into advantages as I got older. For example, adapting to 15 to 20 different places before you're 18 years old, you become quite adaptable. You move from one school to the other, one organization, one neighborhood to the other, you learn to adapt. So that basically, I carried it into my business career. You're also quite resilient. You're also you have perseverance. You have basically, you build a self-confidence that you can get things done because you've gotten things done as a youngster. It also made me seek freedom. I wanted freedom to make my own choices. So later on in life, I became much more oriented towards smaller companies, toward venture capital. I spent some time on Wall Street in very large companies, Capital Research, EF Hutton, and Lehman Brothers. But in my mid-career, I became the chairman of a smaller investment bank called Furman Sells, which had only $20 million in revenues. And I spent nearly over 20 years there. During the 20-year period, we grew it 20 times. But I sought that job out because I wanted the freedom to make my own decisions. And in most organizations, I tend to be in a position which I look for responsibility and freedom rather than prestige and compensation. That's a brief description of how my past life helped me. I did bury it, though. I didn't write my first book until I was in my 70s. When I was 18 years old and went to college, I buried my entire background. I wouldn't tell anybody where I came from. My wife knew most of the story, but not all of it. My children knew very little of it. And at age 72, they said, "Dad, before you leave the planet, we want you to write it down." So I wrote it down, wrote a book, On the Road Less Traveled. It's on Amazon. We sold about 15,000 copies. And in that book, I tell my life story. And it's the first time that's ever been disclosed. And so when I'm writing that, I learned a lot about, you know, why I did what I did and how my background basically either helped me or hurt me.
True, exactly. I'd say like there's a lot to learn from you, and it's kind of never ending. So it's really great. I'm really happy that today I'm connecting with you, and a lot of things to learn. So when we're talking about intentional entrepreneurship, so there may be a few listeners who might not be accustomed with intentional entrepreneurship. So what according to you is the intentional entrepreneurship, and how have you applied this concept throughout your career?
Well, all through my life, as I said, I sought freedom. I sought being my own boss. And one of the things in entrepreneurship, there are a lot of negatives in it, a lot of difficulties, but one of the things you are is you are your own boss. Yeah. Early in my career, I spun myself off from my parent company, started a company, and ran that for a few years. Later on in my life, I started another company and ran that by. But my main involvement in entrepreneurship was basically taking over a $20 million investment bank and growing it, you know, 20 times to about half a billion dollars and 800 employees. My other involvement had been finding entrepreneurs and investing in them. I mean, I have not a great record, but a good record of investing with people who are in entrepreneurial situations. And I also have some definite viewpoints on entrepreneurial, which I believe strongly, if you can help it, don't start from scratch. Find a platform. I started from scratch once with, you know, the two of us in a back room of a bowling alley. And, you know, we did a very good job for 5 years, but ran out of gas and I had to sell the company back to the parent company. That was not a successful operation. But at Furman Cells, with, you know, $20 million in revenues, we had clients and they had 70 employees. I was able to do that much better. So I'm involved in a number of entrepreneurial efforts, both at the Harvard Business School, at the University of Rochester. And I'm a speaker there, and I speak very strongly about spend some time learning about a business before you go into it and things like that. But I have invested in, the whole range of entrepreneurial experiences from, you know, biotech companies to AI companies to, you know, companies that make dresses and they're in the retail business. I'm a sucker for anybody that's got an idea that wants me to invest with them. And I have the normal record of entrepreneurship. I probably lost at least 3 out of 5 of the investments have gone to zero. And one or two of them has made up for the whole investment experience. Mm-hmm. I had one investment in a macular degeneration company that took me 17 years. But when I got down, it was at least 100 bagger or more. And it paid for all of my investments in venture capital. I found that I really liked venture capital, but I found that I was much better off when I had some basic platform to work from. Mm-hmm. There's some minimum number of clients and a knowledge of the business as well.
Wow. So, so also wanted to know and that what are some of the pivotal moments in your career that required you to make intentional and sometimes difficult decisions?
I think that one of the messages I have in my book and I try to tell young people is never be a victim. Never, when things go against you, whether it's your fault or not, never be a victim. And I'll take two examples. I started a company and I said I ran it for about 5 years. We did pretty well for 4 years. And in the fifth year, I had a problem and I had to sell the company back. And my problem was caused by me to some great extent, but also by my parent company. They took away some of the original parts of the company that I needed to stay involved with. In other words, I was managing the portfolio of this company. I was running the business, and they were doing the marketing. And all of a sudden, they took the marketing away, and I had to do the marketing, and that was my downfall. So it was my fault to some great extent. But I was not a victim. And I went on, and I found it within a very short period of time. I found a wonderful job on Wall Street at EFI, and I went on with my career. A second example of that is at Lehman Brothers, I did everything right. In this case, it was not my fault at all. The boss was a very unusual character, and he was difficult to work with. He didn't like me. And I turned one business around from losing to a non-losing proposition, positioned us in the industry. He moved me out of that into another business, the investment management business. I raised $7.5 billion. The group that I work, we raised $7.5 billion in 2.5 years. And then he pushed me out of that. And I was the chairman of five outside companies with outside boards. And I could have gone to the press. I could have fought him. But again, never be a victim. It just wasn't going to work out. Yeah. He pushed me, so I left. And I found my dream job by spending my energies instead of on, you know, being a victim, spending my energies on what's next. Because what's next is hard. You got to find out what's next for you, what's next in the society you're in, and so forth. And I found out in my lifetime, that was the secret. Those are two big turning points. I guess the third turning point was I had a hedge fund that I was running and doing extremely well. And I basically had found another one of my principles was what I call just enough. And an opportunity came to me. They asked me to be the chairman of board of trustees of a major university, a university with 30,000 employees and $4 billion of revenues. And I closed my hedge fund, because I didn't want to be running a hedge fund while I was the chairman of the board. I wanted to focus on this pivot in my life. And that was a major turning point. And I found that spending 8 years as a chairman and raising, you know, over $1 billion for the institution with the president did most of that work was a real game changer for me and gave me a totally different kind and even more greater satisfaction. So those were three points in my life. I guess the most important point is marrying my wife, which we've been married now for 58 years and have 3 children and 8 grandchildren. That's quite pivotal. But those are the business pivots in my life. And pivoting, I think kids and young people, everybody in this lifetime, you all are going to live a lot longer than we lived. You're going to have to pivot more times than we had to. Mm-hmm. And now I've left business almost completely. I have a few consulting arrangements, but I'm focusing on, you know, the 2 books which I wrote, and I'm running a third, to communicate to people how to make better life decisions. In fact, my crusade takes me to the freshman year of most universities. I'm trying to get universities to have the students focus on how they make their life. There's a quote that I use, there are 2 kinds of education. First, there's an education that teaches you how to make a living, and there's an education that teaches you how to make a life. I think schools in general do a pretty good job of teaching you how to make a living. They don't do a great job of teaching you how to make a life. I want schools to spend a little more time on that. And I hope that my book will be one of the reference things they use to teach that course. And I've got 1 course going right now with 70 students in it, very successful, and 2 or 3 other universities considering it. So I'm on a podcast.
We have to leave soon.
Oh, 12 o'clock.
No, I have to be back by 1:30, honey.
Okay, all right. We have to leave soon. You said a half an hour, so we're all set. Go ahead.
Yeah. Keep going. exactly.
My wife, she wanted me to. We have to get back. We have to, you know, it's the old story. Everybody, we're busy like everybody else in the world.
Yeah. So, what advice do you have for the entrepreneurs who are struggling to balance their personal development with their business goals?
I think that I tell people life is in 4 parts, self, family, work, and community. Entrepreneurs have to give up community in general. They can't take on that responsibility. Do they're successful entrepreneurs when they make lots of money? They can. So it's very important that an entrepreneur balances his self, family, and work. And if he doesn't, basically he will be successful maybe in work and lose his family and himself, and that's not a good thing. So he has to continue to focus on how far out of balance he is, because the work is extremely difficult. And he said, get his team, his wife, his children, let them know that this is going to be a period of time where they're not going to have great access to him or her, whoever it might be. And also take particular chunks of time. Even if you're an entrepreneur, don't work 24/7, 365 days a year. Take chunks of time and be with the people that are important. Treat yourself well. I found many entrepreneurs don't treat their persons very well. So these are the kinds of things you have to keep focusing. You know, once every 12 months at least, sit down and say to yourself, am I doing for myself what I should? Am I doing for my family what I should? I'm knowing I'm doing for my work what I should, because in an entrepreneur, you are committed. And that's basically my message to entrepreneurs, to make sure there's other parts of life, because you can be successful as an entrepreneur and, you know, lose your family, and then what good is it all? Exactly. Or in the long term, if people continue to be, you know, work too hard, they may lose the great satisfaction of giving back, which is my fourth part of life.
True, exactly. Lovely. Thanks for sharing this. And quickly, if you can share some of the common pitfalls that entrepreneurs face when trying to align their career with the personal growth. So if you can share.
Well, the pitfall, one of the big pitfalls with entrepreneurs, you have to know when it's going well and when it isn't going well. If it's not going really, if you have to sort of set a time, I'm going to spend 3 to 5 years, and if it's not going well, I'm going to start again. Because I've found many entrepreneurs, their second and third try, they do better than their first try. First try is a learning experience, and they lose the money and go out of business, but go back and do it again, and then they're successful. That's one of the pitfalls. They stay too long with something that doesn't work. Also, the major pitfall for entrepreneurs is surrounding themselves with people that can do jobs they can't do. They need three partners. First partner is partners that can do things they can't do. Second partner is partners do things that they better than they can do. And the third partner is even as important. A partner that can do things you do well, but you don't want to do. And many entrepreneurs just don't surround themselves with the people that can help them, especially in today's world. Today's world, you desperately need partners, because there nobody has the capability of doing everything. Back in the, you know, earlier, maybe in the 50s even, you could pretty much, maybe sometimes you could do almost everything. And I failed in the 60s because I was trying to do everything. And that taught me, so my second entrepreneurial experience was better than my first. Because that's really the biggest pitfall of all, I think, is not balancing yourself for the rest of your life. And the second one is basically trying to do everything and not surrounding yourself with the best partners you can find. And when I at this company, Firman Sells was a small entrepreneurial venture. And when I bought the company, I sold it once and I bought it back. I distributed the stock to the top 20 people, 80%. And then the next 20%, I distributed to the next 200 people. So everybody was invested. I mean, I almost didn't have to come to work because everybody was a shareholder. That's another thing that entrepreneurs should recognize. You've got to share the wealth. And then the final pitfall, probably the most important one, is actually a mechanical one. Boy, put on your wall, raise money when you can. Not when you need it, when you can. I'm dealing with an entrepreneur now. I'm on the board. We went from 0 to $10 million in sales in 3 years. I begged him to raise money. He didn't raise money. He wanted, you know, too much of a valuation. Never raised any money. Now, 3 years later, we're still kind of at 10 million in sales, and nobody wants to give him any money. So put on your wall, raise money when you can, or raise money when people are willing to give it to you. That's a real key and a real pitfall for entrepreneurs.
Lovely. That's really, really lovely. So great. And what final legacy do you hope to leave behind through your work and the personal journey?
Well, it's interesting. I tell people, don't ever try and make legacies. They'll appear if you keep doing your job. I have the most important legacy still is your family, because that's what's left over when all is said and done. Second legacy, in my point, was work, which I took this company over. We grew it when I sold it to Xerox. I bought it back. We sold it to a Dutch company, and that's a legacy. And all the people that worked for me felt pretty good about it. And they said, they gave me a lot of credit, although, you know, I had the wind at my back and had a lot of good partners. But that company's gone today. And E.F. Hutton is gone, and Lehman Brothers is gone. So those legacies are really gone. Hmm. The University of Rochester, where I was the chairman of the board of trustees, you know, I gave them a large gift, and now they named the school after me, an engineering school. So that means 1,000 kids every year have to pronounce my name correctly, which is Hagem, and that's good. And then they put a statue on the campus, which will last forever. So that's a legacy. On Nantucket, I formed a golf course and founded that. And it will last forever. It's 25 years old today and very, very successful. So that's another legacy. And of course, I'm hoping my books will be a legacy. Those are the legacy I leave behind. But the biggest legacy of all is what Scott Peck said in the original The Road Less Traveled, is that giving to others is love. And if I can spend the rest of my life helping people make decisions and helping people to do better than they think they can, then that will be the greatest legacy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ed Hazen. So it's really, really great, and it's really an honor to have you on my show and discuss about this very, very important topic. And there is a lot of things to learn from. I believe people, the listeners, will resonate with me on these things. So thank you so much. And that brings us to the end of this another insightful episode on Healthy Mind and Healthy Life. And I hope that all of you have found today's discussion as inspiring and enlightening that we did. So his journey from humble beginnings to becoming a seasoned Wall Street executive is a powerful testament to the importance of aligning our career choices and with the personal growth and the values. So his wisdom on intentional entrepreneurship, the significance of the resilience and the importance of maintaining a balance between the work and the personal life definitely offers valuable lessons for all of us. So before we move, I'll quickly request Hajim, like, if you can share like where people can find your book and if they want to connect with you, how they can.
If you go onto Amazon and either type in the names of my books or just type my name in, the two books will come up. They're both in hard copy, hard cover, and they're also audible. The second book in the Island of the Four Ps actually has six voices. It's a wonderful experience, and I love fables. It's a fable like Who Moved My Cheese or like Dr. Seuss or Don Quixote. It traps you into doing your own thinking. But you can get them on Amazon. Either type in the name of the books, On the Road Less Travel or The Island of the Four Ps. Just type in my name, Ed Hajim, H-A-J-I-M. You'll get those two books. And I appreciate it very much. If you read them and you like them, give me a rating and a review. And I wish you very good luck and Godspeed, and may the force be with you. All right?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much for tuning, dear listeners. And it is really, really great having on our show, Ed Hajim. So thank you so much. And
thank you.
Until next time, stay healthy, stay intentional, and keep pursuing your dreams. So thank you so much.
Take care.